Jaguars Today is next on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Here's the game, ladies and gentlemen. With no timeouts left, the Jaguars will not be able to stop the clock. Gerard barks out the signals in the shotgun, takes the snap, drops now. He's going to run, and David's going to get in and more. He's at the 25-yard line. Stays on his feet, 20. There he goes, 15. And he's down at the 10. How about that one? 40 seconds to play in the wild card. The snap, the placement, the kick up on the way. Scobie drills it, and the Jaguars retake the lead, 31-29, with 37 seconds to play.
Now live from EverBank Field, 1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
Oh, what in the world are we going to talk about now? Minicamp is over and done with. It's happy time as the players all break until training camp rolls around. Jaguars Today kicking off right here on a Cardinal and Cadillac Friday. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran from your Florida Times Union. Fat Tony is here. It's done, Ryan. A grueling session yesterday to wrap things up. The bucket hat concession was strong yesterday. As I pointed out to Tony several times, the potato chip sellers probably didn't get a whole lot of brisk business. I don't know if you want salty chips in 105-degree temperatures and then in a 45-minute practice. I don't know if they moved much product yesterday.
Probably not. I give Gus credit for calling it when he did, because if you're not going to do anything besides a walkthrough, don't put the fans through 2 hours or else they're going to leave. Seems like everybody who wanted an autograph probably got one. Gus gave away his jacket, his whistle.
Did he really?
His hat.
That's pretty cool.
Bortles gave away his shoes. Julius Thomas was giving away his gloves, his hat. So I mean, the players like sort of recognize what the fans were doing here for the weather. So,
right.
But so you sort of cross off yesterday in terms of what'd you see?
Nothing. Oh no, there was nothing to see, and which is a shame because it's the one day we could talk about anything that was seen out there.
So we could glean a couple things from that, just like, you know, Zane Beatles took every snap at first team left guard the whole month. Okay, so if that's a competition with AJ Can,
he's clearly ahead.
That's going to stay, or he's clearly ahead, or it hasn't started yet.
Right.
One competition that hasn't started is Wisniewski and Bowenko at center, because Wisniewski hasn't practiced. He did 7-on-7 the other day, so which is him blocking nobody. But so, you know, from a fan's perspective, it's your first chance to see the new guys, the free agents. So, but you know, somebody else said yesterday, fans, nobody was making them come.
No, they weren't.
And 1,200 showed up, which was stunning to me that many showed up.
I thought it was great for the fans. Fans always turn out in force, I thought, considering the amount of heat. I don't think you would have got 1,200 out there, quite frankly, if you'd known the nature of the practice. Mm-hmm,
probably so.
But regardless, did you feel like, in talking to Gus, basically on a daily basis, I mean, he makes himself available after every practice. And, you know, just from the players talking to Blake every week, not every quarterback does that either, makes himself available every week during the offseason. You feel like they accomplished what they set out to accomplish going into OTAs?
I think they did. I'm not making an excuse for Blake Bortles. He's never going to be a tremendous practice player. I mean, you know, the positive frame, he throws a little bit cleaner pass this off season. So I think from what they accomplished is they wanted to throw the kitchen sink at the offense. This is everything that's in the binder, and they did that. And the fact that there wasn't a lot of operation type errors, that's a positive. Seems like guys grasp what they're doing. And then on defense, I mean, they say they're playing faster. I'll take their word for it. You know, when you don't have to line somebody up, you can run to them fast. So, they got to solve some issues at linebacker behind the top three. They got to solve some issues at offensive line with maybe a couple starting spots. And at receiver, you got to get Marquise Lee up to speed once camp starts.
Yeah, you got to get him healthy and out there. In terms of Blake Bortles, do you expect a step forward in the progression this year? I mean, we know what they hope for, but just, I don't know if you can tell just based on these kind of practices where he is compared to last year, but you said throwing a little bit cleaner ball. How significant a step forward do you expect in his game this year?
I expect a a big step forward. It may not result in wins and losses, but I think his interceptions will be down like they were the last 6 weeks of last year. And what always helps the quarterback is A, experience. He's got that. B, is better people around him. And on paper, he's got that. So he's got some things working for him.
Yeah, and I think the better people start up front with mm-hmm. the protection. You hope that's going to be significantly better. Even if it ends up being some of the same guys starting, you hope that they've developed or that the competition pushes them to play better this year.
Yeah, and after practice, I sort of made the round of the office for some stuff, for some stories later in the month. And one thing Dave Caldwell said, I said, at what point last year did you realize the O-line needs to be overhauled? He sort of said, he goes, he didn't think it was as much a talent problem as an experience problem. Okay, well, that makes sense where they added Parnell. You know, they could have replaced three or four guys. So, you know, they felt they were young. They feel Jokel's going to be better experienced. They feel Lender's going to be even better with experience.
Yeah, I don't think he's a concern for anybody.
And if they go Bowanko, they feel he'll be better experienced. And I don't think he was that terrible last year.
Right. So you've got some natural progression and development with those guys.
Yeah, and what you have to bank on in this, you know, the way you build a team.
Exactly. And you've got other options. So you got the veteran in Wisniewski to push Bowanko. You got the rookie in Can to push Beatles.
Mm-hmm.
So you're thinking to get better just through that. From what you could tell, any interest or any thought to pursuing Evan Mathis when he was released by the Philadelphia Eagles?
I thought about that. I didn't get around to asking that because it seems like they're really set there. If they hadn't drafted Can, then he'd say, okay, if there was an injury problem, but it seems like for what he's probably going to command, probably no interest.
Yeah, it would seem right. Based on what he's paid, if you were to bring him in, and let's say he started at left guard for you,
mm-hmm.
I don't think you keep Beadle. I don't think you mm-hmm. keep both of those salaries. It's one thing if you have Beadle ultimately with that salary on the bench because the total salary for the position is going to be a lot lower with Can's rookie deal in there.
And I had this in today's paper is the view of Beatles inside the building is a little different than from some of the outside opinions of, you know,
how well he played last year.
Yeah, and they're not going to say that he was great. They said he felt he did turn a corner at some point in the season. I would tend to agree with that. You know, just in the sack stuff, his name didn't come up a lot during the last six games of the season after the bye. So, you know, the GM signed him to that contract, so he wants him around to give him another shot, so he's going to be around, and barring a collapse in camp.
In today's paper, you wrote about five things we've learned in minicamp. We'll go through four of them later, but we'll touch on one of them now because it aligns with our question of the day. Allen Robinson said is clearly the number one wide receiver on the team, which I don't think is unexpected.
No, It was like a five things we learned, some of which are obvious.
Right, some of which were obvious or we knew or maybe were confirmed or whatever the case may be. We feel stronger about it.
And I would put that one in the now feel stronger about because I felt that he ended the year, even though he's hurt, he was their best receiver last year. And this year, you know, he was rehabbing back from the foot, comes back, and it's like he never left. So that's... that's going to be that's a great sign of optimism because he's clearly got a rhythm with Bortles. And so I think there's going to be big things for Allen Robinson this year.
When you say big things, and I think very hopeful is the way I would describe Jaguar fans. I think they really feel that this guy is a big-time breakout candidate mm-hmm. this year. Is he going to be really good compared to what's around him, or is he going to? Does he have the chance to be a top 20, top 25 type receiver in the National Football League sooner rather than later?
I think for this year, you're going to look at his numbers at the end of this year, and we're going to go, it's pretty good for the Jaguars. I think that third year, if he continues his climb, is when you get into that, okay, is he in the top 20, top 20 receivers in pro football?
Right.
You know, so.
But you think he's got that kind of potential?
I think so because he's like, he does, because he's so versatile. And he's not a one-trick pony. He's not just going to run straight down the field and you catch one out of seven of those or whatever. So he does a lot of things. So I think he's going to have a lot of catches. You know, my guess, what did I say, 70 for 850.
800 and something.
I don't think his yards per catch is going to be overwhelming this year, but I think when you have a third and six and he knows where to get to the flag and catch a seven-yard pass, I think those are the kind of plays. You add those plays up, that's how you move down the
field. He excelled on third down last year in the 10 games he did play. He was on pace to catch just about 77 passes last year as a rookie. So today we ask you the Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day. What are the final numbers you expect out of Allen Robinson this year in terms of catches, yards, and touchdowns? I know it's kind of a guessing game, but you try to put your hat on and predict, well, A, is he going to be healthy? You can't know that, but,
sure.
You know, I don't think there's any reason to think, Tony, with Allen Robinson that he's any more susceptible to injury than anybody else. Guys do get hurt. He missed the last six games of the year, but right now, he looks healthy coming out of a few missed OTA practices. No reason to think he's not going to have an outstanding training camp if he stays that way.
Sure, and he's excelled from everything we've heard from guys like Ryan and whoever's been out there and had the opportunity to watch him practice. He's been among the best players on that offensive side of the ball, and I'm curious to see what it looks like with, you know, Julius Thomas on the same side of the field as Allen Robinson when they're out there on that offense, especially on third down and six. I think Julius Thomas is more of that field stretching type presence for this team than an Allen Robinson even would be. And I think he already showed last year that he's very comfortable, you know, on those third down plays where it is about getting to the sticks and getting to the right yardage.
You know, he can, like, maybe it was the Miami game where he turned like a skinny post into that 50-yard touchdown. I think that's where his big plays will come, where he catches it, guy bounces off him, he runs down the field. Gus's quote on Wednesday, I don't know if you played it yesterday, how he wants Allen Robinson to play more angry.
Yes.
I told Gus, I said, that's one of the best quotes you've had since you've been here. Because, you know, he said, hey, go up there, knock somebody's head off when you're trying to get the ball.
Yeah. He's got the ability. He's got the physical ability to do that.
You know, you have the tools. Use them.
And, right.
You know, I think now it's, you know, the running punchline is, well, you got to get to the red zone to have those opportunities.
Have your mindset match your skill set. I might coin that phrase.
Oh, sure.
Pretty good.
And it was something he was really good at Penn State, was taking those little dink and dunk passes and turning them into big plays for that Penn State offense. And we didn't see him doing much of that last year. It was really the case for the entire Jaguars offense for the most part. It was, you caught the ball where you caught it. They weren't making a whole lot of guys miss. They weren't breaking a whole lot of tackles and turning those into big plays. They did every now and then. Allen Hurns had a handful that I can remember. I can remember the Allen Robinson play where he spun off that tackle and got himself into the end zone, but not a bunch of them. And that was something he was really good at Penn State, was running through a tackle or two to make a big play. So I think he has that ability. It just needs to show up in the NFL. And maybe when your head's spinning and you're trying to figure out if you belong on an NFL field, there's a lot going on in your rookie year other than, let me just make this guy miss. There's so much more going on in your head, and maybe this year he'll just be more comfortable on the field.
I think it's what it comes down to, right? Once you get settled in, and then you can start to play more aggressively because you don't have to worry about, like you said, do I belong or not? And there's less unexpected, less new coming your way. So let's hope he does stay healthy between now and training camp and really all throughout the season, and see if he can match some of the lofty goals people have for him out there. You can weigh in on your thoughts on the question of the day. What is Allen Robinson's final stat line, catches, yards, and touchdowns this year, by tweeting the show at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Fat Tony. Of course, the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line is open to you at 641-1010. That also works as your call-in number, 641-1010, and the Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business as well. We'll hear from Gus Bradley as things wrapped up on the field yesterday. We'll get into more of where this team stands heading into training camp. What do they hope to get accomplished, if anything, between now and July 31st when they reconvene to get out there on the practice field again? Mike Dempsey, Ron O'Howard of the Florida Times Union, Fat Tony here with you. It's a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday just getting underway. Jaguars Today coming to you live from Everbank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Jacksonville's home arena. 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Claude Nolan Cadillac brings you the show every Friday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Ryan O'Halloran here at Everbank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Got a Jaguars Today field trip going on tomorrow, O'Halloran. You're welcome to tag along. Bold City Brigade, St. Augustine chapter, has invited us out. How are you with the Bold City Brigade? You guys get along? Do they like you?
I guess. I talked to a couple guys yesterday at the workout.
Minicamp.
Yeah, I talked to four fans, BS them a little bit. I'm a man of the people.
Are you a man of the people?
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah. So.
A flip-flop wearing man of the people.
I'm off flip-flops.
You're off them?
Yes, because my feet started to hurt.
Oh.
So I only wear flip-flops in the house now, but everywhere else it's.
Orthopedic flip-flops around the house.
Under Armour flip-flop. So I'm on sneakers full time now.
Ah.
Which gets a little warm.
Oh, you kidding me? I mean, your feet are gonna roast.
Yeah.
What's gonna happen?
My question about the Bold City Brigade is, a surprise for you to say they have a Saint Augustine
chapter.
Yeah. Shouldn't it, like a whole Jacksonville area chapter, or is there Jacksonville?
They do have a Jacksonville chapter, and I guess, you know, they have their different watering holes that they like to congregate at, so I guess, you know, it's easier geographically. There are a lot of chapters out there, man. I probably follow 8 or 10 of them on Twitter. It's always interesting to me where they pop up. There's San Antonio, Phoenix, who else? Denver, I think.
And there's one in L.A.?
There is one in L.A. I think there's several of them up the East Coast. They get around, those guys. But they mentioned to us that they've got a little gathering, their own OTAs, their own organized team activity going on tomorrow night at Ancient City Brewery. And at first I thought, I work, I'm not going to do it. And I thought, all right, well, I don't work till 2 in the morning, so I get off at 10, I'll be there at 10:30.
Hey, I know you like Jaguar fans. Hack, are you going to be there and sign some autographs?
Dirt. I don't know. I did ask him about it yesterday. I think now, though, he needs written permission to leave the house after, say, 4 in the afternoon. So I'm not
Especially
sure.
On a weekend.
Oh, yeah. Kidding me? A Saturday night? But then again, he, like a week and a half into this new phase of his life, he said that the most exciting thing he had done in the last several days is eat this delicious bowl of tomato soup. So, I don't know, maybe the romance is cooled enough that he can get the hall pass on a Saturday night, 3 weeks into this whole matrimony thing. I'm not sure how that works. So, I'll see all those guys out there. Lauren Brooks is gonna, tag along on the Jaguars Today field trip. Tyler Devitt's going to be there.
Oh,
Matt Toney is going to star at the event. I'm just wondering who's going to pick me up at my house at 10 o'clock.
Uber.
I'm not an Uber guy. Do you do the Uber?
I've done it in other cities.
They're going to surge price me, and I'm going to have a $10,000 bill. That's what I don't trust the Uber.
I don't think that's going to happen, but.
Probably not. Probably not 10,000. But have you heard those stories?
I've heard them. Yeah.
We used Uber to get to and from the Bears Jaguars preseason game.
Oh, did you now?
Yeah.
Well, we went all over Phoenix with Uber, Tony. It worked out very well when Lauren was in charge of it.
Yeah.
Well, she's going to be there tomorrow night.
She is going to be there tomorrow night. So maybe I'll get an Uber.
Director of Transportation.
I'll point them to her when I show up and they need money. You know, that's going to work. So we'll see who Duval Doom has. Threatened to make an appearance tomorrow night.
Yes, he has.
So we'll see who all is out there and what kind of hijinks we can get into over the course of the weekend. Let's hear a little bit from Gus Bradley wrapping up thoughts on minicamp. We should get Gus in here probably early next week, I believe. Osier, Johnny O, is going to be in with you on Monday. Tony, I'm going to be up in New York for the Fantasy Sports Trade Association for a couple of days doing some midsummer fantasy drafting. Ryan O will be back in next Tuesday with a co-host to be determined. So I don't know when Gus is going to pop in, but I know Blake's going to be around. Hopefully we can get Blake in sooner rather than later as well. But it seemed like he was going to stick around and work out for another week or so. The plan is to spend some time with Tom House tidying up those mechanics out on the West Coast again, maybe some time with his receivers, including Julius Thomas, getting a little bit of that chemistry down, and then before you know it, July 31st will be around, and off we go on the 2015 season. Gus Bradley yesterday talking about the defense, starting off with this saying that they kind of asked the defense not to go for the ball in minicamp yesterday. He explains.
We asked our guys to shadow but make no plays on the ball as a defense, and that's hard for them in a situation like this, but we really got a lot accomplished. With doing that, we felt like, especially Blake in his situation, he got more rep. And usually he was going four and fours with the twos, four with the threes. This way he could get multiple reps. And as a way that we could really take advantage of this last day, check our guys' alignments, assignments, communication, and still have effective practice.
Shadow and not go for the ball. I think that was the motto defensively in 2012.
Well played. Was this the James Sample rule by any chance? Let's not have any freak occurrences on our way out the door here.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of the first 2 days. Nothing seemed out of the ordinary. I mean, maybe because they didn't have helmets on.
Right.
Maybe just if you like, you go for the ball, you miss, you bop somebody in the head.
Right. Just avoid even the chance or some offhand contact at that point.
Gus Bradley speaking after the wrapping up minicamp yesterday, also talked about yesterday being more of a mental practice for the guys.
Well, I think mentally, more of a mental approach. And again, it was a way for Blake to get multiple reps. And, you know, it's just something that we were trying out to see how it would work together. I mean, a 2 minute, same thing with the 2 minute situation. How do you do a 2 minute through a walkthrough? Well, we didn't walk through it. You know, it wasn't full speed, but we got enough to accomplish. And we made some decisions. You know, there's an opportunity for us to spike the ball. We didn't make that decision to do that. We'll look back at it. We got to, you know, write that one down.
Doesn't matter, Ryan. Will we look back in training camp and say, man, they should have taken every opportunity to be out on the practice field? Now, there, you know, teams all around the league cancel these days, you know, whether it's the final day of OTAs. For instance, the Buccaneers, who were the worst team in the league last year, canceled the last day of minicamp. So did the Patriots, who were the best team.
Yeah, and Houston yesterday.
Houston did as well.
I mean, I think they got what they got out of that is they threw the ball around a little bit. But if the fans weren't invited, if that wasn't scheduled, then he would have said, hey, it's going to be 1,000 degrees out. I like the work we put in. Let's just meet. I'd say, I understand that too. So, you know, at this time of year, he used the term throwing the players a little sugar earlier this week. This was probably a little bit of a case of that, keeping him out a little shorter yesterday.
He just talked about the fan turnout yesterday. As a matter of fact, over 1,200 turning out for minicamp.
This is great. I didn't know how many were going to be here, and especially with the weather they had us. But it's amazing, this group of fans that we have. You know, I told our players today that it's important to connect, but I want them to understand we're with each other on this journey. You know, we're with them, and they're with us, and that's the only motive. And it's great. The fans are awesome.
Yeah, the reason they had the mini camp probably at all yesterday is because, again, it was open to the public, and Gus Bradley, kind of following up with that, was asked if he feels bad about having a short minicamp practice with the fans coming out having their first chance to see these guys.
Yeah.
No, I don't. You know, because I think a lot of them, just in my talking a little bit with our PR guy, they want to come out and meet the players and visit with the players. And, you know, I think first and foremost, we got to take care of our players and take care of our team, make decisions what's best for them. But also, there was no sight of canceling practice. You know, our fans are coming and making a trip to come here. We didn't want to do that, and we felt like we could get a lot out of today's practice.
Gus, hush, I'm talking here. these guys need an indoor practice facility. They would have been able to get a lot more work done on Monday and Tuesday, or Tuesday and Wednesday, without the threat of injury. They had a bubble. I don't know how much it's going to cost. I don't know what the ground, you know, if it's able to do it in the ground here. Your pro football team, build the damn bubble.
They're working on it.
You know how long that's going to be?
I don't know. Do you?
I could care less. I didn't think you need one now, even if you got to take it down and sell it to somebody.
Is there a good market for the
Bulls,
the resale practice bubble market?
Charles Buxton Rogers IV needs a bubble at
Where do you want to put the bubble?
I just put it
on. Put it right on top of the practice field.
And if it takes part of the other practice field away, you make do. It's unbelievable that they don't have one.
I'm told. All right, I'll get to that coming up. But you think it's unbelievable? Well, they wanted one for a long time, but they finally have somewhat of a concrete plan to produce one.
I appreciate the plan they have in place, but you know, I think there's more. They should have had more of a short term solution to solve this very problem, and then once you build the project down the street,
a more permanent type solution. All right, getting back to Gus Bradley here, talking about what's going on. Tony, we just played cut six, I believe, right? Is that
yes.
Right? All right, Gus, talking about the short minicamp. You said the length of it and shortening of practice had nothing to do with trying to avoid injury.
I don't think it's avoiding injuries was completely. I think that it was a way to challenge our players to say, hey, can we come out here? We're going to have this kind of tempo. Normally on a Saturday we do a walkthrough tempo, where it is truly a walkthrough. Well, this is in between. Let's take advantage of today and kind of push it a little bit with no helmets on, see what we can get accomplished. So I think it was, you know, for multiple reasons.
Gus Bradley went on to talk about how it feels different on the field this year versus last year.
Yeah, you can feel it on the field. Guys that have come in, a guy like Chris Clemens, you know, he comes in and practices this mini camp, and he says it feels completely different than it was last year. You know, so, you know, you rely on your players and you trust them, and I would agree. It feels different, you know, so hopefully these next 6 weeks we have a good off season.
I would have rather he brought up Thurston Armbruster, who has at least been here the entire off season, than a guy who just got into town.
Well.
The end.
The things that upset you or bother you are always very curious to me. I think Thurston Armbruster's got some nice credit for what he's done on the field this year.
Well, the person he was citing the example of, saying, "Boy, it's really different around here." Gus is a guy who's been here for 2 days,
right?
And it was basically a pain in his butt a month.
That may have been, you know, just what popped into his mind at that point in time. You know, in addition to feeling different, Gus was asked how it feels different. What is it that you are seeing that's different from last year?
You know, I think you look at it by unit. You know, I think defensively, I think this, a lot of guys, they've been in the system now a couple of years. So they're playing faster. They're playing with more confidence. I think they're taking more ownership of it. Offensively, I think we're more talented. I think you're seeing more talent. I think there's greater competition in every position group on offense. And that's why we're seeing limited mental errors. And that's a good sign going into training camp. And special teams, we got greater length and greater speed. So that attributes to where we can have a chance to be better on special teams. There are some things we got to find out, right? Like returners. We got to find out returners. Sometimes that's difficult until you get in the preseason. Even at times in preseason, that's tough. You get in the preseason games, you got to get a lot of three and outs, so you get some stops, so you get some punts. So, you know, those are all challenges, but very pleased where we're at.
You can run that cut for the next 6 weeks, and that perfectly, you know, puts in a capsule what he thought they did and what they got to do in camp. I mean, point by point.
We'll do that every day from now until July 31st. That's what we've got coming up. Finally, Gus, talking about the message that he imparted to the Jags before sending them off into the break.
Protect the team. That was the big message. You know, make decisions in these next 6 weeks. Make good decisions, great decisions, because their decisions affect not only their team but our organization. So, you know, rule number one is protect the team. That was a big part of it. And then also we had three things. The other one was that we've had a really good offseason. 61 days here of practice through OTAs and minicamp, and felt like they really competed. And then, you know, come in, they, you know, really focus on these next 6 weeks and get the most out of that so we come back in the best shape that we ever have been.
Rule 1A, stay away from the conkhouse.
Don't get arrested. You're full of them today, aren't you? whether it's the conkhouse or anywhere else, stay out of the headlines. How about you guys at the TU throwing them a bone and not trying to get these guys in trouble over the next 6 weeks? I'm kidding.
Well, it depends on the nature of the arrest, whether I'll bury it.
All right, there you go. That seems to be, I think, what every head coach worries about when those guys are out of eyesight and earshot of the coaching staff's influence. Are you going to show up in a headline that's embarrassing to you, risks you time on the field with a suspension, or just puts the franchise in a bad light? And I think for the most part, I mean, look, you had the thing with Dwayne Grotz last year down in Miami. They signed Bernard Pierce after he was let go, getting a DUI with another team, but they've been a pretty well put together team.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have an issue here or there in any large organization, you know, whether it's sports or anything else. I think I don't have too many concerns. It can happen. All it takes is one bad night of judgment to break a good track record, but I'm not too concerned about that.
Yeah, and you know what you do, like, first of all, they are, you know, by age they're adults, and you know they act like it. They're not keying cars, they're doing something stupid. I mean, you don't want that stuff to happen. So, you know, go on vacation, come back, be ready to go July 30 when you report to camp, and practice.
And on we go. All right, there you go. Ryan O'Halloran and Fat Tony with me, Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today. Phone lines open to you at 641-1010 if you want to get in. What are the areas you're concerned about with this football team? What are the position battles you think are the most interesting as these guys break away that you're looking forward to seeing them convening and try to settle on the field? We'll get to some of that coming up as well. 641-1010 if you want to call in or get in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. That is the way to do it. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Jaguars today on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday since 1905. Claude Nolan Cadillac, your preferred Cadillac dealer here in Northeast Florida. Why? Well, they've got the largest selection of new and pre-owned Cadillacs in Jacksonville with absolutely no dealer fees. And Claude Nolan Cadillac, the only Cadillac dealer here in North Florida selling and servicing the ELR. They've got an on-site body shop. They'll paint and repair any model, and they're guaranteed to offer the highest level in customer care and service. That's plenty of reasons. The elegance and experience of driving a Cadillac one step away. You can build your lasting relationship by logging on to ClaudeNolan.com. Visit them at 4700 Southside Boulevard. Call 642-5111, 642-5111 for Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor on Jaguars Today. Yes, yeah, so are you champing at the bit to say something there?
No, I'm just
never quite sure.
Making sure I was paying attention.
Yeah, well, that's good. You got the headset on, which signifies you're paying attention. You can hear when you breathe heavily into the mic.
Yeah, that came out. I was like,
that's pretty accurate representation of what we got out of you just a few minutes ago. Ryan O'Halloran, we're going to go through his five things we learned at training camp coming up. One of them we dealt with, that Allen Robinson is clearly the number one wide receiver on this football team, which coincides with the question of the day today. Tweet us your response or any manner of feedback you can give us on projecting Allen Robinson's stat line, catches, yards, and touchdowns for 2015, and we'll take a look at some of your predictions later.
It's going to be interesting to see what the fans think.
Yeah, and
the range of what we get.
We're seeing them come in, and I think most of them are fairly realistic. I think optimistic, you know, slash realistic, but not too many people going overboard, although Tony Agolini's always good for that, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
I think he had 21 touchdowns and north of 1,700 yards.
Now, does that include practice?
No, Tony's a smart ass who I believe would like to signify that there's no way we can know what the numbers are going to be. Well, there's no way we can know a lot.
That's what Gene Furnett would answer. Well, time will tell.
Time will tell.
Thanks, Gene.
Man, I mean,
he's at sea right now, so I can make fun of him.
I know he is.
But even if he was sitting here, I'd make fun of him.
The amount of TU on TU crime that is evident when Ryan O'Halloran is in the studio. although Hayes doesn't do anything that draws your anger, your venom, right?
No.
You guys are copacetic.
You think alike. Yeah. Well, I can always get on Gene because it's so easy.
Well,
but it's also like, hey, he knows he needs me during this basically every day. It's like, how do I get here? Who should I talk to? What time does this start?
Wow.
So, hey, so.
That's what I do with Tony every morning, Tony.
That's my role as the Jaguars team leader at the time, Gene.
He is the team leader, Ryan O'Halloran, here with us. Let's go to the phone lines for the first time today at 641-1010. You're welcome to join us here on the program. And I believe we've got Greg up first today. Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good morning, guys. How are you doing? I'm doing pretty good.
Great.
Good.
I was just curious. When these guys break, you know, to break their own down, do these teams give all these guys their playbook?
Yes, because they don't have to turn in their iPads. I know when Blake Bortles takes his week off, but also when he comes back here, they're allowed to be in the building. They can't meet or whatever the coaches, but the Jaguars have given Bortles specifically some tape packages of routes, some of the things they did in minicamp, but also a to-do list on some things to, you know, make sure he keeps up on. So these guys, you're going to see them tweeting this week, hey, they're going on vacation, they're going here and there. But after that 4th of July, usually got a lot of the guys are in the building or at least working out on their own, trying to stay sharp.
You're allowed to take a little bit of a mental break. I mean,
sure.
You don't have to grind every second of every day. It's not necessarily going to be the most productive way to go about it. As Sergio Brown told us yesterday, though, Tony, you can't take much time off from the workout side of things. You really are building towards putting yourself in the best position at training camp, because once you hit training camp, it really is all downhill. You've got 100% of your physical capability going into training camp, and it just gets sliced off little by little because that's just the nature of the weekly grind that these guys go through.
And it's one of the things you hear veterans talk about who have been around the league for a while, too, is not only the transition from college to the NFL and what it does to you mentally trying to get ready for this game, the comparison between the two, but physically the grind of that 16-game season with the month-long training camp and what that requires of you physically to be ready to play football in December as much as you need to be ready to play football in September. And I think that you watch guys learn how they need to eat, how they need to train, the differences that they have to take into account from one level to the next. And that's why you see rookies and second-year guys struggle at times, I think, with some minor injuries and things like that. Injuries are going to happen in the game of football, but you listen to guys who are around the game for 5 or 6 years, it's like, I didn't realize how much I needed to change about the things I do. And I think Sergio Brown has been around the league long enough now that he has a good idea of what he needs to do to be physically ready in September and December to play the game of football.
What's the sense you get in terms of how comfortable they are right now with what they've seen from Sergio Brown?
You know, comfortable because they're almost forced to be right now. They were liking Sample's progress. I think they envisioned that as a mano a mano in camp with.
Will there be enough time for Sample? Do you get that sense?
I don't think there will be because, best case, he's back for the last two preseason games. He's got to catch up. You know, what is his conditioning going to be? Because when you have that broken arm, there's not a lot you can do with the cast on. So, you know, he'll be set back. I think Brown's your week one starter. We'll get a sense of how they feel about him as a free safety, depending on how much they interchange him and Cyprian. If Cyprian's playing a lot of middle third there, that would be a sign they maybe feel Brown is better off as a strong.
Yeah, and he said really his mindset yesterday is really focused on just strictly being that deep third of the field guy. And, you know, despite the fact that they play a lot of left-right, he's really in trying to absorb the aspects of being the last line of defense and put himself in that mindset. And, hey, look, you can't fix everything to complete satisfaction. They would have loved to have Devin McCourty. Had they gotten Devin McCourty, they likely wouldn't have been able to get Devon House and Scuda and some of these other guys. Or at least they may have been able to. They may have chosen not to.
Uh-huh.
They took that money that they kind of earmarked toward to chase McCourty and spend it on some other resources, one of which was Devon House. So let's look. That's one of your points in the five things we learned is you feel that there's a good problem at the cornerback position.
I think there is. I mean, I was surprised. It shows you how much I know. I was surprised they went after a guy like Devon House in free agency and spent that kind of money because I thought that they felt good about their three returning guys and, you know, their history was they were going to draft a corner in the draft again this year. So the Go House, I could care less about the money. I mean, they have the money to do that. Making him a number one has never been that. So if he can do that, the guy I think should be the number two is Aaron Colvin. I mean, I'm finally starting to get some support on that. McCray, they lauded Grotz during. So you got three guys for two spots on third down, and then maybe you can do some different things where you have four corners and one safety or something like that. So what they had to do, they do have decent depth there where that depth's been tested 2 years ago. I mean, Ball got hurt for a little bit. They had to throw McCray out there. He wasn't ready to play. And so, you know, Mike Harris was your slot. So now they just have better talent, better options.
You're going to have at least three corners on the field a good bit.
Yeah, 60% of the time.
Right, and that other 40% of the time, that's not insignificant. That'll be where the competition is, and if Colvin is the better guy, I'm sure he'll be out there. And like you say, it's a good problem to have when you think you have three guys who are capable of fulfilling those two roles. And I like Grotz's attitude. Grotz didn't shy away from saying, hey, I'm second team right now. That's the reality of it. I got to fight to get back to where I want to be. And I think from everything you've heard from the coaching staff, he seems to have responded well to the challenge. You would have liked to have him been a guy who was kind of penciled in coming in this year because he played well the first couple of years. But I think, you know, regardless, we can't do anything about what's in the past. If he does give them what they thought they were getting when they drafted him in the third round, then you're really talking about some quality depth.
Yeah, and for him, he's got to stay on the field.
Right.
That first year was derailed by the two ankle injuries. Last year, he got the concussion, wasn't playing great when he got hurt, and then went back in there when Ball got hurt. So if he stays on the field, I mean, there'll be some kind of role for him on this defense.
You're doing your projection, your first projection this weekend?
Sunday.
For the 53-man roster, right? Right now, off the top of your head, do you think that Jeremy Harris has a spot in there?
Yes. I had him off. I had him off the roster at the start of the off season. You know, but then you know, you hear some things. Okay, he's done well. Dwayne Walker praised him without being asked specifically about him. So I threw him on there.
And he fits the profile, you know, mm-hmm. size-wise, or the measurables of what they're looking for. Have you heard any buzz one way or the other early on in rookie minicamp? You know, there's a positive buzz about Nick Marshall. Anything? And understandably, he's switching back to a position he hasn't played in a long time, going from quarterback to cornerback. But what have you heard, if anything?
Nothing. Which is neither good nor bad. It's just like when you get the veterans here, you're sort of like preoccupied with them. And I've always looked at Marshall position switch as his goal should be play well enough in August to be a practice squad player and then use this as a redshirt year to go against receivers every day. So, you know, I would say he has virtually no chance of making the roster unless they're beset by injuries.
Right. But right now you like the five that they have, and that's probably the number that they're looking at.
Yes.
All right. So there you go. That's one of the five things that we've learned through the eyes of Ryan O'Halloran covering OTAs and Jaguar veteran minicamp. We'll get to some of the others coming up shortly, but coming up next, we've got this date in football history, plus the Honda drive around the NFL. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, and from the Florida Times Union, Ryan O'Halloran here with you. It's Jaguars Today on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday. More to come on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, this date in football history brought to you today by Bob Roberts First Coast Roofing here on this date in 1943. The NFL's Philadelphia Eagles and Pittsburgh Steelers merged their efforts because they both had lost a significant amount of their roster to World War II enlistments in the draft and such. Officially, the team was known as the Phil Pitt Combine, or Combine, however you want to look at it, and generally referred to as the Steagles.
Yeah, Steagles.
Steagles. That was the official name. You won't find that in any NFL record book, but they were the Steagles. They went 5-4-1 in 1943, and they dissolved their merger on December 5th of the same year. Birthdays on this date. I'm shocked, Ryan O'Halloran, that you did not know who Wahoo McDaniel was with your wrestling knowledge and lore. Wahoo McDaniel was born in 1938, played as a linebacker for 9 or 10 years in the National Football League all throughout the decade of the 1960s. And then went on to find greater fame as a professional wrestler in a variety of circuits, including championship wrestling from Florida, in which some people grew up on, yours truly, back in the day. He was also notable for having held the NWA United States Heavyweight Championship 5 times, was an enemy of Ric Flair, among others. Is it Jimmy Valentine, or I think it was Greg the Hammer Valentine's dad back in the day? And his finishing move was the overhead chop. He would just come at you, I guess, with some kind of Wahoo, Chief Wahoo Indian chop. He was a Choctaw, Chickasaw Native American, and he would devastate you with the overhand chop. Wahoo McDaniel lived to be 63 years old, passed away in 2002, also born on this date. More notable in this area, 1977, Peter Warrick was born on this date. Thought he was going to be an outstanding NFL player. Lasted for 6 years. Surprise me. How many catches do you think Peter Warrick had in his 6-year career, Tony? And Ryan?
175.
175.
92.
He's 100 off. 275 is what he had. I was surprised he caught that many.
Me too.
Honestly, in his career that lasted 6 years. Although he did have one really big game where he scored a couple of touchdowns against the Jags on a muddy day in Cincinnati,
yep,
as I recall. 1982, what could have been David Pollock, one of the greatest Georgia Bulldog defensive players of all time, was born on this date, having a very successful run as an ESPN commentator, now only 33 years old still. Still only 28, but out of the league for a few years. Rashard Mendenhall, part 9/11 truther, part
pot smoker,
part pot smoker, part I wouldn't say Bin Laden sympathizer, but certainly made comments that made people question his loyalties. He said, "Hey, I'm just saying, you know, people losing their life is a tragedy. Regardless, it didn't win him much favor.
No,
the organization quickly distanced themselves from Rashard Mendenhall." And he was out of the league. He said he chose to retire. Interesting guy. It's right to have his own opinion. Didn't win many friends with it. And born on this date in 1992, C.J. Mosley, Ravens upcoming star linebacker, had an outstanding rookie year last year at the age of 23 years young now. This State Football History brought to you this week by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. The only call you need to make for your roofing needs, residential or commercial, repairs and re-roofs, is to 287-7756, where you can get a roof for as little as $500. First Coast Roofing, license number CCC056797. That is This Date in Football History.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Bruce Irvin, who attended the Seahawks' mandatory minicamp this week after skipping the voluntary part of the team's offseason, said yesterday that he was misquoted a few weeks ago when talking about playing in Atlanta in 2016. Quote, in 2012, I had a lot of questions coming out before the draft. Pete and John stuck their necks out there for me and took me in the first round, so why wouldn't I want to be here? Seattle did not pick up the fifth-year option for Irvin, which would cost him $7.5 million next season. The team, as Irvin pointed out yesterday as well, has a few pieces that they are still trying to work things out with financially, including quarterback Russell Wilson, which we've talked about a lot, middle linebacker Bobby Wagner, and an apparently disgruntled Michael Bennett. The Houston Texans and cornerback Jonathan Joseph have agreed to a new three-year contract that will keep Joseph with the Titans through 2017. The new deal is worth $22 million, $11.5 million of that money guaranteed for the now 31-year-old Jonathan Joseph.
Bruce Irvin, future Jaguar.
You think so?
Next year.
Why as opposed to Atlanta, where he, that is his hometown, his, the head coach is a former coordinator of his, why would he go this route? Money? I mean, just think they'll outbid him?
Outbid him, and why wouldn't you want to come and play for the defending AFC champions?
I didn't know, you know, who are you going to push out of the lineup at that point after the Jags win the Super Bowl?
Fowler and Irvin.
All of them. Right, yeah. Just those two in combination.
Yes.
We'll terrorize.
Terrorize
as
the
Jags
South.
Go on their bid to go back-to-back Lombardi trophy.
Yes.
Right on. Sergio Brown. I did like what Sergio Brown said yesterday, Tony. He said, you know, you got to put in the time now while you have the time to get your body right, because it's a long season when you plan on playing into February. So,
yeah, when you plan on playing into February. And I liked it even more when he followed it up with, you know, you said the Jags haven't seen a lot of February, and he said, well, I don't know what it feels like to not play football in January.
Yeah, I've been to the playoffs every year, and I expect to go to the playoffs this year with this football team.
Well, they play January 3rd, regular season finale, but he may be resting that day because Gus will rest the starters.
Well,
for
when
the
you
playoffs.
Got home field locked up,
yes,
throughout, right, then you have that luxury.
The only thing would be if they're 15-0 and Shaw goes, I want a perfect regular season, everybody's playing.
This is true. I'm expecting to be 14-1 at that point. I know I'm a hater. What can I tell you? But
we kid ourselves. We crack ourselves up.
I do like, though. I mean, look, at some point, teams that have been perennially out of the playoffs eventually get back to the playoffs, and sometimes they do it by taking a major leap in the win-loss column, you know? And, you know, my thing this offseason for me is try to temper my own expectations, because when you're in the building every day, it may be different for you, okay? But Tony and I work for the official station of the Jags. We don't draw a paycheck from the team, okay? We don't. But they give us the facility to work in. We're here. We see the coaching staff and the GM and all these guys like you do every day. But I wouldn't say you come from an adversarial position. You're more of a straight journalist. You're just reporting here are the facts, and you can have your opinion as well. But, I mean, for us, I feel like every year I kind of get sucked into what I want to see happen versus the stark reality. You don't want to underestimate and have them outperform, and then it's, oh, you didn't believe in them. So I'm trying to be realistic about my expectations this year. I think they can challenge for a 500 record, and I'd love for them to prove me wrong and be an 11-5 team. I just don't think that's highly likely.
Yeah, I would say 500 is highly unlikely, unless highly unlikely. I drank the Kool-Aid last off season thinking they could go from 4-7. Now I would say, you know, in the 6-7 range.
Do you feel burned by that though? Is that why, or
it's not, it sort of resets your senses.
Right.
You know, okay, I should have seen these warning signs.
But we do see, because, you know, and look, obviously Blake Bortles maybe didn't have the body work of Matt Ryan in college, right, for instance. But when Matt Ryan gets to Atlanta, it coincided with a new head coach, sure, and that Michael Turner came in. So there were a lot of new pieces, but they went from a 4-win team to double digits. Same year, Joe Flacco came into Baltimore, took over a 4-12 team, and helped make them a double-digit win team. And so when you add that piece, even as a rookie, we've seen big turnarounds in recent years with some of these quarterbacks out there. So I don't think it's, you know, going from 4 wins to 7 wins, I don't think anybody thought that was out of the realm of possibility last year.
Especially with, Tennessee and Houston had new coaches.
Right.
Well, if you would have split against them.
And Houston was coming off a year where they had earned the top pick of the draft because they were the worst team in football.
Yeah.
So
you look back now at the end of 13, okay, they took advantage of teams who had quit. Houston beat them twice. And, you know, Tennessee wasn't very good, so.
Tennessee's still not very good.
Yeah, so that's the key is, can you Houston, Tennessee, 4 games there. Can you win 3 out of 4 this year?
Right.
Okay, that means you're closer to 7 than you are 4. So you got to, winning a road game or two, that helps the cause too.
Right. As we said early, those first couple games here at home, I think if you're going to approach a 500 record, those are critical games for you.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to sniff 8-8 those first 5 games, I want to lump that Houston game. That first 6 games, you got to be 3-3.
We've got 4 days until Tom Brady's appeal is heard by the National Football League. June 23rd is the official date, and I don't know if Brady has really a say in this, but watching NFL Insiders the other day, the word seems to be that Brady wants it all or nothing. He's not going to say it's not going to. If Roger Goodell says, "Hey, will you sign off? I'm going to reduce this to 2 games. Will you drop all protest and move on?" And it's either Brady doesn't want to sign off on anything. He wants a complete clearing of his name. He feels if he accepts any lesser punishment, that's an admission of guilt, and he doesn't want to make it. Does that make it more likely, in your opinion, that it stays at 4 games, or could Roger Goodell just say, "Look, I'm going to reduce it to 2 or 3. Brady could still opt to go the route of trying to sue to have it eliminated entirely. But do you think Goodell is more likely to say, "Look, if you're not going to promise me that you're going to drop all this legal activity, I may just leave it right where it is"?
I think that's what he will do, and that's what he should do.
Leave it at 4?
Because if you're going to reduce his suspension without a admission of guilt or remorse.
What if he gives you the cell phone? What if he says, "Here's the cell phone. Months later, I know you wanted it. It's past the deadline, whatever. Now I'm ready to give you the cell phone, or at least turn over the messages that I deem to be within the parameters you were looking for"?
That would help the cause. I think the only way he gets that suspension reduced is via outside legal, which would go from 4 to 0. Or if he comes in and says, "Hey, I got to pick my battles here, Roger. I didn't think I'm guilty of A, B, but not C and D, so I've at least copped to that." And Goodell will say, "Well, then you're down to 2 games.
I don't think that's going to happen.
And that's where he's going to make a mistake, because at some point you have to give up. If you're looking at all or nothing, this isn't baseball where it's 10 games out of 162. You're looking at a quarter of the season here.
Right.
So, I mean, if you're Brady, you're looking at the AFC. It's okay. Even if I miss 4 games, can they still win the division? Probably.
Probably.
But at some point, are you willing to sit out 4 games, be it based on stubbornness?
Well, and if from his point of view, and I'm going to take him at his word here for the moment and say, if you really think you've done nothing wrong, all right, or nothing that certainly warranted this, I'm not going to admit to something I feel like I didn't do as well. Goodell looks for contrition. That's one of his big things.
Ask Adrian Peterson.
Yes. And ask Michael Vick. Ask a lot of these guys. The more you fall on your sword, the more you say, "Hey, I throw myself at the mercy of the court." The court gives you some degree of mercy. Quite frankly, I hope he keeps it at least 3 games for obvious reasons, And, by the way, it doesn't mean just because Brady doesn't play for 4 games that this team's not capable of winning in that first month of the season. Yeah. They're going to look, in New England, what they're saying, "Well, thank God at least one of them's against Jacksonville in our backyard." Right?
Yeah. If they go 3-1, they'll say no big deal, and our guy fought for what he believed in.
Right,
he sat out his penalty.
Unlike Robert Kraft, who is willing to tuck his tail between his legs, that's how they feel up there in New England like that. They feel like he gave up the fight on behalf of the fan base and behalf of the players.
Well, I think he gave up the fight based on Brady to sort of keep that door open to get it reduced.
Yeah. and may not like the outcome. We'll find out. Well, hopefully we'll get some resolution on it. Even though they hear the appeal on the 23rd, doesn't mean we'll get a straight answer on what's coming down the line. But
sure.
Imagine the Jags 2-0 coming off two home wins against Carolina and Miami and going to New England with Matt Flynn at the helm or Garoppolo at the helm.
That'd be pretty sweet.
You kidding me? I mean, it doesn't mean they're guaranteed to win it, but the excitement level and the amount of people thinking that they're getting to 3-0 with a victory over the defending Super Bowl champs would be off the charts.
And look, if you're just looking at it from a Patriots perspective, if he is out for those four games, the fourth of those four games is Dallas after the bye week for that New England team. So after that, they go to Indianapolis, which I know they've had Indianapolis' number, but if you're looking at the other teams in the AFC that you would think that the New England Patriots would be fighting for home field with, even if you are assuming they're winning a division, I think the Colts would be high on that list. And you're talking about Tom Brady after not playing for a month of the regular season, having to come in and go on the road to Indianapolis in what could be a crucial game for deciding playoff seeding for that Patriots team, too.
So, but they'd have the extra week of practice, right? The bye week comes after week four for them?
No.
Comes after
before.
Week three.
They got the Jags bye week at Dallas.
Yeah. You're right about that then, coming in. Although, they've had such the number of the Indianapolis Colts that...
Oh, they've dominated.
They really have. That I would think that... It's not like Brady, even if he has a four-game suspension, he's still going to participate in training camp. He's still going to play in the preseason. I don't think he's going to be that rusty at that point in time. I think he's got a lot of knowledge to fall back on. But we'll find out. Maybe get some answers on that next week as to his availability early in the season. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you. We'll get back to your five things we learned during minicamp when we return. Phone lines open to you at 641-1010. In fact, we've got Jim on hold. Let's get him in before the break. Jim has a question for you, Ryan O'Halloran. So let's do that right now. Jim, you're on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
My first comment is, Mike, I was going to offer to be your designated driver tomorrow night because it would not be a problem. But since they're a sponsor, I can say this. My new Claude Nolan Cadillac did not come with air sickness bags, so I really just don't think that'd be a good idea. Okay.
Jim's doing shtick.
He is doing shtick, but we appreciate you supporting Claude Nolan Cadillac, Jim, so we'll let you go ahead and get away with that. Go ahead. What's your question?
Okay, the question for Ryan is, I'm on the Times Union website a lot, and do you ever read the comments to your articles online? Because it's like I told Tyler, it's like a auto wreck for me. It's like I keep telling myself, don't read these comments because you're going to get so irritated. And I'm Mr. Happy there. I know he's got to read them and go, you know, if he reads them, he's got to be to the point where he wants to reach through the computer and find these guys and hunt them down, because I know they irritate me sometimes. So I was just curious what he...
I don't read the comments because most of the time it's a comment on the comment on the comment. And, you know, I've sort of said if people have a question about a story, email or tweet me. So that's sort of the way I do it. If there's something in there that has like 25 or 30, I'll skim through it really quickly. And as soon as I'm called a D-bag, I just sort of move on.
Is that enough? The D-bag is enough to get you to move on? Or, well, I'd known that, Tony, a year ago.
or the most popular comment, why do you hate Tim Tebow?
Oh, God. What I find with a lot of commenters, whether it's on message boards or, and I do read the comments sometimes of the stories you write, certain people, you get to recognize them by their login name, and they fit everything to a particular point of view that they already hold. And either they hate Bortles and this team is moving to London within, you know, the next 12 months, or they are completely...
Gus is overmatched.
Gus needs to be fired. Worst coach in the league. And hey, look, I get it. His record hasn't been outstanding, but you know, whatever it is, even if there's something positive, they find a way to spin it to the negative, or vice versa. If they're, you know, teal glasses wearing, they do the complete opposite. Why are you hating? As far as that goes.
Well, the thing that always gets me on Twitter and also in the comments is, let's say there is a breaking news story, like a signing or a release that nobody had seen coming. The comments are invariably, well, this makes sense. I thought this was going to happen. Well, why didn't you say it weeks ago then?
Yeah.
So
everybody knew it was going to happen, yeah. Ryan, I know how to get him out of here if I need to in a hurry. All right, we will come back, take a look at some other points in Ryan's five things we learned during Jaguar OTAs and minicamp. That's coming up. Your calls and texts welcome at 641-1010 on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony, Jaguars Today on a Claude Nolan Cadillac Friday on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Hey.
Doesn't take much.
I do that for a break now.
You feel better?
I do now.
Good. So that's what we're here for, man.
He always perks up.
He really does.
JT.
Old JT.
What took you so long, Tyler?
Hey, Tyler, you know, he can play whatever he likes. We don't really restrict him. But I'm glad he doesn't opt to go with, like, six Timberlakes on your days that you're in here with us. One's good.
I should send him a playlist of, like, all different stuff.
You should. Take a little ownership. Happy to have it. At least maybe we should do this, like, at the 10:15 break. Set the mood for the day.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Right? Instead of waiting so deep into the show. Maybe you wouldn't be so moody all the time. I don't know. 641-1010.
It's called real.
Real. Is that what it's called? You're really moody.
Real.
641-1010 is the number. Tiger Woods was scheduled to tee off in about 5 minutes. And
I bet he shoots. No pressure today. No, he's not. I bet he shoots 76.
I was going to say 76, 74, something like that, right? It'll be much better, but it won't be close to what it would take to make the cut.
Well, scoring conditions are better in the morning, too.
They certainly were yesterday.
Yeah.
Although they say the wind's not expected to really blow that much. It'll be interesting to see if guys in the afternoon can do anything today. Dustin Johnson and Henrik Stenson tied for the lead at 500 par.
I hate the course. It looks terrible on
TV. I love it.
I mean... if I want to watch Lynx golf, I'd wait to the British Open. But I do like having golf on live in prime time.
It's great. And look, I don't mind the greens being brown. I really don't.
Me either.
If they roll true. And that's apparently the issue that they're complaining about is that, you're getting, I don't know if it's spike marks or just the way the grass grows. They have a mix of grasses on there.
It's a couple different types of grass.
Right.
And I know I was listening to the broadcast yesterday. They were talking about the one type of grass goes like dormant in the afternoon even. So like, the way the grass is growing changes throughout the day, and it changes the way that you're putting. And that is the golfers aren't specifically complaining about it. They're complaining about the way the golfers do, saying, putts just weren't quite rolling true for me today. That kind of thing, where it's kind of like these little nudges saying these greens kind of stink.
Yeah. Oh, trust me. Sergio was complaining about it.
Yeah.
Sergio didn't care. Sergio's like, hey, if you want to call me a bad guy for, saying what everyone else is thinking, but I have the balls to say it, feel free, because I'm going to say it. Good for him. Phil Mickelson, who I picked, Tony. That's the only guy I highlighted yesterday.
Scobie update.
As we know, Scobie's going to be watching the U.S. Open. He said that the greens were just different speeds from green to green.
Yeah.
That's the thing. You think you have it dialed in, you're like, wait a minute. I've been banging it all day, or I've been tapping it all day, and then you get the opposite on the next screen. But regardless, I like it. I like the moonscape. I like the difficult conditions. I like everything the U.S. Open
I do
can throw
too.
At them.
And I kind of like what Fox was doing, all the wide shots with a lot of these. So you're getting like landscape shots of these guys attempting these approaches to greens. I think it was kind of cool on the coverage yesterday, especially with such a unique U.S. Open.
Right.
It is more of a link style thing to get those wide shots of what this golf course looks like. It was neat yesterday.
Well, and also, like, they're slow to. They were slow yesterday. Tell me who's taking the shot, what hole they're on, what their yardage. And I mean, if they replace Holly Saunders as an interviewer today, I mean, she's terrible.
I didn't hear a lot
of
the coverage.
You can tell she's being fed the questions.
Yeah, and she looked really nervous. Every moment yesterday that I wanted to complain about whatever the broadcast sounded like who was saying what, I just kept telling myself, I've had to deal with Chris Berman on the U.S. Open for a handful of years. This is so much better than Berman.
Good point. Anything would be better than
right.
Berman. Anything but Berman. All right, we move along from the Scobie update at the U.S. Open. And we go to the phone line. 641-1010 is the number. Terrence on board with a minicamp question. Hello, Terrence. How are you?
Hey, Mike. How y'all doing, man?
Hey, where you been, Terrence? We missed you.
I know. I'm working during the day, so I didn't get to you during the day. So,
all right.
Yeah, my summer, I'm out for the summer. But I was at practice. I walked through yesterday. I saw you out there.
Why don't you come by and say hi,
yeah,
Terrence?
No hello, Terrence?
Yeah, I saw you out there. What is that?
You know what? The next time, with no training, I'll come over there.
Stop by and hug it out, Terrence. That's how we do it.
All right, I'll do that. Well, Mike, here's what, like I said yesterday on another show, I love this regime, and I don't want to, knock them, But I thought that was more, I thought that was more of a New England Patriots move yesterday. And I want us to be that way. You know what I'm saying? I mean, that's just
So you were happy with that because you think it's something the Patriots would have done. Is that what I'm getting from you?
I mean, initially I was upset. I thought I rushed because I got there like 10 minutes after practice started. And then it was over in like 30 minutes. I mean, out of the walk. So I was looking for, you know, that's the first time I got a chance. I wanted to see the veterans with the rookie. So, but, you know, I found a way to get over it, you know.
All right.
Got a hat from, had a bucket hat from, Bernard Pierce and, gloves from Ryan Davis. So,
you made out pretty good then.
Yeah, I did. It was great. I'm glad. I love that bucket hat. So, but anyway, I just wanted to stay clean as a franchise. That's all, you know, keep it up and up. But, you know.
All right, Terrence. Go ahead, Ryan.
I mean, I think that's, you know, he summed up the day. Would they like to see more football? Sure, but they're able to visit with some of the players. They came away with a souvenir. A Bush League move would have then sent us an email 8 a.m. yesterday saying it's too hot, practice canceled. Sorry, fans.
Yeah, you couldn't have done that. And I would just say this to me. If you have an inkling, and I think they always have an inkling, that it could go this way. If they get their work done, they're going to get out early on the last day, OTAs or minicamp. Schedule the open practice for Wednesday, right? I mean, when you know you're going to be out there for a full 2 hours, because I would imagine a lot of people took the morning off to come out. You know, that's all I'm saying. Just do it in a day when you know there's going to be something to see. And maybe that's part of it. Maybe they it's a new offense. They want to keep it under wraps as much as possible. But we know there's going to be some open sessions for the public during training camp. So I don't think you're giving away too many state secrets opening one minicamp practice up, a non-contact practice at that.
No, and in 3 years that all these guys have been here, it's the first time you've raised half an eyebrow. You know, it's something that they've done involving the public. It's like, you're doing what now?
Oh, and look, I'm not trying to make a federal case.
No. They've been so good, and even on yesterday, a day like that where a lot of fans are coming out, like Terrence said, they want to see all the veterans with the rookies, they still made it a point with the players to go over there, interact with the fans after this practice. We know we didn't give them much, so we're going to give them this, too, and I've heard a lot of positive feedback from people that were out there.
641-1010, the number. 904, you'll need that if you're calling from outside, of course, Duval proper, and that's what Christoph is doing from the UK. What's up, Christoph? How are you, buddy?
I'm very good. Yourself?
We're doing quite well. What's on your mind today?
I've just got a question for Mr. Happy sitting there. I was wondering how, with all the drama that's been going on in San Diego with the Eric Weddle contract and extensions and stuff, if he believes Eric will be coming over to play for the defending AFC South champions next year.
Nice.
Yes.
Thank you, Christoph. Good to hear from you, man.
All right, see you later.
We're a long way off on that. I mean, sure, that'd be a great addition. Because
he and Alex Mack will come in at the same time.
Yeah, Alex Mack, Bruce Irvin, Demaryius Thomas via trade.
You got them all.
Yeah. So,
why not Dez?
I mean, you know, if Weddle hits the market, it all depends on how they feel about their free safety spot, how they feel about James Sample. To me, they would want to see him before they make a play. And Weddle's going to cost McCourty-type money, maybe not as much because he's a little older.
A little bit older. He'll be like 31 this time next year.
But he would definitely be a guy who was in demand. But I'll grant you the point that it's going to be interesting to see how that free safety spot shakes out. And if it's a need in January, that means it didn't work out.
It's certainly, from Eric Weddle's camp, a lot can change when money and offers start coming out on the table. But he seems to think this is his last year in San Diego. He's made it pretty clear. And look, I understand his point of view. They said they're concerned with him wearing down because he plays so many snaps. He's like, hey, I play so many snaps because I want to help. I'm trying to earn my money. I play almost every snap on defense. He plays special teams, all this stuff.
From a team perspective, that was one of the worst arguments you've ever seen.
That you play too much?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It seems like it, right? But they're trying to use it against him. We understand it's a business and it's all a negotiation, but they've got one very unhappy member of their organization right now. But a lot can change over the course of a year when the dollars start flying. Quickly here, Ryan, we talked about Allen Robinson being the number one receiver on this football team. We talked about the good job that they've done stockpiling talent at the cornerback position. Some other things in your five things we learned this offseason, linebacker depth remains a concern. We kind of knew that, again, but it's just we keep hearing Armbrister's name. brought up as a guy who's flashed a little bit right now. Who do you think they're most excited about or most secure in behind the projected starting three of Skuda, Posluszny, and Telvin Smith?
I think your fourth guy right now is Leroy Reynolds because of that special teams factor. And he's, you know, he played in the middle his first year as a backup to Posluszny. Last year he played a little bit at the auto, didn't really work out there. So you can work him at a couple positions, so the versatility helps. After that, then there's like a lot of questions. You have like six or seven guys there for two spots, maybe three spots. No, probably two if they keep six. So, you know, that's where it's going to play out is in the preseason games when you can see who can play special teams, who can run down the field, and then also, you know, on defense. I mean, Jeremiah George, is he only playing the middle? Kari Fort, does he only play outside? How much should they get? You know, who can add a second position quickest will get the edge.
You also mentioned that despite the fact that the perception is Zane Beatles was absolutely terrible all last season, you hear it enough, the last 5 to 6 games of the season, things started to turn for Zane Beatles, and your observations just that he's taking every snap right now with the first team kind of signifies that if A.J. Cann is going to push him, he's going to have his work cut out for him. Beatles got obviously a ton of experience over him.
Yeah, and you look at it from the Jaguars' perspective, one thing that they stressed going into the offseason was they need continuity on the line. So that's why they kept that five-man group together throughout the whole on-field workout. So do you want to shake up the mix right away and then add another inexperienced guy who could be a very good player very quickly? So I think when the pads go on, one of Gus's characteristics of camp, you're going to see twos with ones, threes with twos, etc. So when the practices are open, you're going to see A.J. Cann as the first team right left guard. That doesn't necessarily mean he is winning the job.
Right. And then finally, Julius Thomas, not only a great signing, but you think right now, clearly, in your opinion, the Jaguars' best player on the roster.
Yeah, and he's a difference maker, and they haven't had that kind of guy. I mean, it's, you know, the first time we were out there last month for an OTA, you see him gliding across the field, going up to make catches, and you say, okay, they haven't had this kind of weapon here, and that's what they need, is they need difference makers on offense that can help them score. So, like, so far, he's done all the right things.
All right, there you go, Ryan O'Halloran. Check out all the details on five things that we learned at minicamp in the Jacksonville paper in the Florida Times Union, where you're going to see on Sunday Ryan's initial projection for the Jaguars 53-man roster, and Ryan will be in next Tuesday to discuss that with Tony on Jaguars Today. Coming back, Fan Feedback Spotlight, asking you today to predict the final numbers for Allen Robinson. Catches, yards, touchdowns, what do you got? We'll take a look at some of the feedback that we got from you. Coming up next on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Friday brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac. Before we get to the Fan Feedback Spotlight, to get to the phone line, 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Ryan O'Howard here with you on Jaguars Today. Let's welcome in Bud to the program. Good morning, Bud. How are you? Hi, Bud.
Hello, man. How are you doing today?
We're good, Bud. How are you?
All right. Thanks for letting me on so late. I know our tandem right now should be Lee and Robinson. My understanding, I'd like you to correct for me, is you got your White House and your slot guy. Your White House, is that where your pastor player goes and stretches the field? And is that, and the other White House, I don't know his position. I'm looking at the final cut. I'm honestly believing that the Jaguars are going to pick up a veteran wide receiver and linebacker. But explain to me the three positions of the wide receivers, and who do you think could be, the three?
Gotcha.
I think your top three right now, because they're healthy, are Robinson and Hearns outside, Rashad Green in the slot. You know, if Marquise Lee is healthy and is a deep threat, you obviously put him outside, and stretch the field that way. I'm gonna have him keeping six receivers, but I think right now, and I wrote about this on Sunday, is Allen Hearns is hanging around and producing and like he did last year. And, you know, he's a big part of the mix, even when Lee is healthy. So you know, do you spread the snaps out a little evenly? And Rashad Greene has really made an impression on everybody so far. So they got some options there too.
Has he distinguished himself after, obviously, in the minicamp he came in, he had the first day where he had some drops. Mm-hmm. Do you get the sense that he has distinguished himself?
Yeah, I do. And why I say that is at this time of year, you talk to veterans and they'll bring up guys who's impressed that they didn't really know a lot about. On defense, the guys they talk about is Audric. And then on offense, the skill position guys are saying, I didn't know Rashad Greene was that quick. So,
okay.
And, you know, that
quickness is more important in the slot, I think, yeah, than pure speed. And
beat
to answer that
press.
Right.
Yeah.
To answer that part of the question, typically, your outside guys, at least the guy who is your primary deep threat, is going to be your fastest guy among the wide receivers. I mean, Randall Cobb's a fast guy in the slot. I don't know if he's faster than Jordy Nelson on the outside. There may be, you probably could point to an example or two where the slot guy is clearly faster on the team and they deploy him in a certain way for that reason. But typically your slot guy is worked in on quickness.
Yeah, like a Brandon
underneath.
Cooks, maybe in
right.
New Orleans.
Exactly. Compared to Marcus Colston, I would take Cooks probably in a foot race, Tony. Good example of that. His body size, though, probably dictates he's better suited to the slot. The Tom Bush family of dealerships brings you the Fan Feedback Spotlight, featuring, of course, Tom Bush Mini, which has been serving Northeast Florida and the surrounding area since 2002. They've got a pretty cool thing going on for Mini owners this weekend. In fact, tomorrow at Tom Bush Mini, the Jacksonville job, a photo scavenger hunt that's going to benefit school children in need through the nonprofit organization Communities in Schools of Jacksonville. That's going to be going on out at Tom Bush Mini tomorrow at 2:30. And basically what it is, it's a photo scavenger hunt where they're going to give you a number of landmarks in the greater Jacksonville area, and you're going to have to drive your minis around and take creative photos with those cars in those shots. And they're going to raise a bunch of money, as I said, for school kids in the area through Communities and Schools of Jacksonville. You can learn more by logging on to TomBushMini.com or visit CISJax.org to learn more about Communities and Schools of Jacksonville and to support that organization as well. They bring you the Fan Feedback Spotlight, which today asks you just to predict the stat line for Allen Robinson as to what he'll end up with. In my head, I'm thinking something in the neighborhood of 80 catches, 1,000 yards, and maybe on the high end, 8 touchdowns. Call it 6 to 8 TDs. But he averaged about 11.5 yards a catch last year and was on pace to catch 77 passes. So I think 80 is right in line there. That would be a bump up of 1 yard per reception to 12.5, which is not exorbitant by any means. And, you know, that gets you to a nice round 1,000 yards. I think that'll be kind of in the ballpark. Does that strike you as over the top or conservative or what?
It's not too far from what I had.
You're a little lower on the yardage, right? Yeah. In the mid 800s in yardage.
Yeah, I mean it's. I can see that happening.
Touchdowns are tough to predict, right? Yeah. I mean, tell me how many Blake is going to throw. I'll give you a better idea of what percentage of those goes to Allen Robinson.
Let's say he throws 25 touchdowns.
All right, 25 touchdowns, I think 8 for him, 8 for Julius Thomas, right? And then you scatter 9 throughout. Those are going to be your primary beneficiaries, you would think, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of catching the TDs. Allen Hurns, maybe your next best guy. You hope Marquise Lee gets a few. There's going to be some random ones thrown in there, too. Chances are they probably don't have 2 8 TD guys, because it's been a while since something like that's happened. But I think Allen Robinson's certainly capable of putting up 6 to 8 with those numbers.
Last year, 23 guys apiece had at least 80, and then 23 guys had at least 1,000. So
Two different categories.
Okay. 23 guys apiece.
Probably a good bit of duplication in those as well. So, Tony, what's some of the feedback we got and some of the predictions we got from the listeners?
Here's what we got from Irish Jag. We got 85 for 1,000 with 7 touchdowns. From Eric, I'm hoping for an 80-catch, 1,200-yard season with 10 touchdowns. From my man A-Rob, I've been high on him since we drafted him. From Ronald, 80 for 1,100 with 8 touchdowns, so all in about that same kind of range. From Demetrius, 90 for 1,100 with 6 touchdowns. The presence of Julius Thomas and Yeldon will pay huge dividends to everyone and keep defenses honest. Let's hope so. From Jason, 71 catches, 1,272 yards, and 8 touchdowns. From Isaiah, 73 for 1,200 with 5 TDs. From Chris, he will be our big play guy as well as an end zone threat next to JT. 75 catches, 1,000 yards, 12 touchdowns. From Nick, 85 for 1,200 with 8 And from Will, 80 for 1,100 for 9 touchdowns. So all in that same kind of range. The average there is probably around 80 for 1,100 with 7 touchdowns, would be my guess.
Yeah, obviously this is predicated on believing he'll be healthy for 16 games.
And then 54 players last year had at least 5 touchdown catches.
Okay. So 54, that's almost 2 per team. Mm-hmm. Out there, and you're talking about everything from running backs, tight ends, and all that in the mix. A few more on Facebook. Josh Wiggins said whatever numbers he does get will be a lot less than the real star, Jaguar wide receiver Allen Hurns, hashtag Hurns for president. All right. George Weirich, very specific, with 83 for 964 and 8 scores. Don Enfuego went with 90, 1,080 and 6. And then I like this one from Tommy Blair. He went with 6 catches for 114 and 1 touchdown. That's a Super Bowl stat line, says Tommy Blair. So like the way you're thinking out there, Tommy. And appreciate all of you tuning in all week long. Tiger, by the way, with a bogey on the first hole of the day.
No shock.
He quickly gets it to plus 11. Seeing if what do you think? He and Ricky Fowler buck a hole today? Is that what they're playing? Pretty much, right? I mean, they're not making any other money this weekend. Buck a hole.
There'll be no shots of Ricky Fowler's girlfriend running onto the 18th green.
No, probably not. But I'll take some random shots of her regardless. Tiger at least had the wherewithal to remark upon the fact that he kicked Ricky Fowler's butt yesterday by shooting 80 to his 81. So at least he can be slightly self-deprecating, I suppose, in those circumstances. All right, that does it for us today. Minicamp in the books. Jags not on the practice field again till late July, the very tail end of July. But next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'll be out. I'll be up in New York with the Fantasy Sports Trade Association doing some summer stuff. I'll talk about that when I get back. But Monday we'll have Johnny Owen here, Ryan O'Halloran on Tuesday, breaking down his 53-man roster prediction, which you can get at the Florida Times Union or in the Florida Times Union on Sunday. So thanks to Gus Bradley, we were able to bring you some of the sound from him yesterday. We'll look to Tony and I grab some of these players that are in here working out over the course of the next few weeks and bring them on the show and get their thoughts on where things stand after a summer of work out there. Final thought for you, Ryan O'Halloran, you good to go?
Good to go. I should have the roster tweeted out Saturday night for online.
Okay.
And it'll be in the print edition Sunday.
Check out Ryan O'Halloran on Twitter, simply at Ryan O'Halloran, and check him out in the digital pages of the Florida Times Union and the printed ones as well.
Why not?
For that matter. Why not? Check him out wherever you can. And you get him here on Jaguars today. He'll be back in with us next Tuesday as well. So for Ryan, for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. Hey, we hope we see a bunch of you tomorrow. I have a feeling we will at the Bold City Brigade St. Augustine chapters get together, their own off-season OTAs down at Ancient City Brewery. Festivities apparently get underway at 7 o'clock, but those who like to be fashionably late show up no earlier than 10:30. And that's what I'm planning to do because of work requirements. So leave me some of whatever liquid is flowing. And I'll see you there at 10:30 tomorrow night and hope to see a bunch of you out there. And that means you, Duval, do.
Sweeten the offer a little bit. You need somebody to pick you up.
I do need somebody to pick me
up.
Hit me up on Twitter, at MD_1010XL, if you want to be my designated driver.
The first couple rounds are on
me. Wait a minute. I'm not going to buy rounds for my designated driver. So you may want to rethink this.
Well, so his buddies.
All right. I will buy a couple of rounds for your buddies, everyone who's in the car with you when you come to pick me up, other than the driver.
You left out the designated driver at the beginning of the show. That's where I got my lines.
Right, you're right. That's right. I can drive. I have a car. I can get there. But I want to be able to enjoy myself and not have to worry about doing something stupid. So I'm going to leave the car at home. I'm going to think ahead, which we always tell these athletes to do. Right? I'll call the NFLPA. They'll give me a
ride. I thought you just needed a lift there.
I do. I said I will take care of getting myself home at that point in time.
That's what I meant, is like if you need somebody to get you there.
That's a good point.
You can just buy that guy a round.
I will buy that guy some rounds. I hope he's not driving home later, but I won't be riding with him.
Yes.
So
that's what I was
hit me up on Twitter if you want to schlep me around town tomorrow. That's going to do it for us. We got to get out of here. XL Primetime is next on 1010XL. Thanks to Claude Nolan Cadillac, our Friday sponsor at Jaguars today here on 1010XL 92.5.